So, the prelude, why are we here? Turns out there was a guy by the name of Fred Pender in our mathematics department here at Rutgers. Started in 1937, but began doing computing in around 1954 when he had a machine that did accounting in the what is now Zimmerli Museum, Valentine Hall. He moved on up to an IBM 650, installed in a computation in Hageman Hall, which is one of the dorms, you may know some of you. And he began teaching information processing as well as his own numerical analysis within the math department. Upgraded to a IBM 1650 in 1962, and in 1963, Fender with Don King and Tom Mott separated from math. First, to form a Center for Information Processing for the Services, and secondly, an Information Processing Department for the academics, which required at that point for all engineers to take basic computer programming and provided the students who were going to do this. Fender had in mind for some time back to develop a Department of Computer Science. And he achieved this in 1966, which coincided with Rutgers' bicentennial year of the founding of Queen's College. And something else happened. There was money being poured into higher education, and there was a newly proposed new college, Livingston College. And the idea was that the new department would go there, while there would be a separate center for computer and information services that would serve the entire university, and Fred Fender became the chair. This is Fred Fender, probably in a photo from the mid-50s, if I recognize the styles, dating myself too. Fred was a PhD in theoretical physics from Penn, and he joined the Rutgers Math Department in 37. In 41, he did probably very important work for the war effort, working on the DML flight duplicator, or trainer, flight trainer, one of the earliest ones. Later on, after the war, he pioneered computer education with numerical analysis methods. As I mentioned, he was the first chair. His scholarly activities included a lot of practical things. For instance, computer design of the performance of the reservoir system of the Raritan Valley. In other words, what we're the river that's right next to us. Water purification for New York. Feed calculating with linear programming how to get the least cost of animal feed. Necessary amino acids for nutrition, and with Euro and all kinds of other projects with the School of Engineering, or the College of Engineering as it was then known. As I said, the most important work was this Curtis Wright DML flight duplicator or trainer, which he worked on in the version that you see at the bottom that looks like an empty warehouse with a whole bunch of equipment. That's where Fred tried to figure out how to connect the electronics to the calculations that eventually resulted in that shiny aluminum piece, which was the flight trainer that Curtis Wright in northern New Jersey produced in the 1950s. So Fred was a pioneer in many works, many ways of combining physics, mathematics, and the beginnings of computers. After starting the department in 66, very sadly, he had a stroke, so he had to step down as chair in 67, Tom Mott took over. And at that point, Tom was interested in computer science, but he was more interested in library science. And he became nominated as dean of the soon-to-be created School of Communication Library. Well, it was then Graduate School of Library and Information Studies, then became Skills, now it's become SCI, all the acronyms. And at that point, something very interesting happened. More funding from the state of New Jersey came in, and Saul Amaril was recruited from the Sarnoff Center at RCA in Princeton to head up the computer science department at Rutgers, located in Livingston College, because the dean of Livingston, Ernest Linton, a physicist here at Rutgers, and a neighbor of Amaril's down in Princeton, was very keen on having a computer science department that stood on its own and was in his college. There had been already some tension between math, where Fender had left and started his new department, and so having it in a separate college seemed to be the right idea. Saul Emmerich was, as those of you who know him, the ultimate insider. He was connected to government, he was connected to funding agencies, he was connected to academia, and here's a letter of him to Ralph Dungan, who was the Chancellor of Higher Education in New Jersey, saying that basically he had visited Rutgers, and he thought that the Rutgers guys actually had their heads screwed on right and were going to support the creation of a new department that would go somewhere. Saul was a remarkable man. He was born in Thessaloniki in Greece in 1928. He had been, after the Nazi invasion of Greece, a guerrilla in the Peloponnesus, not far from Sparta. He then was incredibly enterprising. He managed to bring his family, escape from Greece, and under the guns, you may have remembered that old film, Guns of Navarone. Some of you are old enough to remember that. And he got himself with the whole family to Turkey, through Vichy-occupied Syria, down to Palestine, where he got to Gaza. And he enrolled himself, without any formal high school education, in what became the strongest Israeli academic technical school, the Technion, or Israel Institute of Technology in Haifa. He joined the scientific department of the Israeli Ministry of Defense and is one of the people who was instrumental in Israel obtaining its independence, because he was a designer of the rockets that helped prevent the Egyptian Navy from landing in Gaza during the Israeli War of Independence. He worked on AI, all kinds of operations research and control work. Remember, this is the age of following up Norbert Wiener, communications control, and Shannon with information. And he moved to the United States in 1953, where he joined Columbia University, its electronic research lab, got his master's right away, and his PhD 2 years later. From 57 to 69, he was at the RCA Labs down in Princeton, where he organized and headed the computer theory group, researching and directing work on computer design, programming, all kinds of applications in AI, computer linguistics, and the theory of computational processes and information systems. So to summarize his pre-Rutgers days, Saul Emmerich went from the traditional control and cybernetics of the 50s to AI in the 60s, very much influenced by his sabbaticals that he spent taking time with Herb Simon and Alan Yule over at CMU, where Eric Feigenbaum, being their students, was also located. He developed a detailed logic tree representation and analysis of problem solving at a very general level for the missionaries and cannibals problem. I don't know, those of you not in AI may not know it. If you have three missionaries on one side of the river, three cannibals on the other side, a boat where you can only have one of each going back and forth, how do you make sure that you pass the cannibals and across the river, no, sorry, the missionaries across the river without being eaten by the cannibals? Emmerich developed all kinds of insights into how you can abstract problem solving in graphical as well as syntactical ways, and representing problems so that they were goal-directed and applicable to computers. When he came to Rutgers, he was a very practical guy. Three things that he knew were priorities. He had to get state approval for a graduate program to produce PhDs so computer science would become a reputable scientific program. He needed funding from the federal government, and it turned out, from as I'll describe, that NIH seemed to be the best place to go. And he expanded the faculty, and he brought Bill Fabens, Rick Falk, myself, and De Korgas at that time. And he started a whole new experiment on computation, trying to apply a new math, which actually was a failure, unfortunately. But notwithstanding, what was a success was getting the PhD program going. And if you look at the material, these slides will be, I'm sure, posted. You'll be able to read them. He already had the very clear view of how AI could be used as a focus for the new program at the graduate level. He joined Fender, and he brought here someone who is here today, Marv Paul, who'd been with him at RCA, Chino Srinivasan, who'd also been at RCA, Avril Winnerts, who had done managing of computing centers at both Princeton and Stevens. And then all of these people came and joined him at the graduate faculty. We had people at the associate level, including Ken Kaplan, whose name you see there in red at the bottom, who'd also been with Saul and became our chair later on. Me, and Stan Baxendale, who was one of the first pioneers in computer graphics here at Rutgers. All of them were strongly supported by the president of Rutgers, Mason Gross, who you may have heard of, and shown here at the groundbreaking, at the model design, which is shown at the groundbreaking for the Hill Center, where Ken Wolfson, who's the chair of math, who's standing next to Saul Amaro there, had got a big NSF grant for mathematical excellence at Rutgers and created the math department as we know it today. He and Saul didn't get along, which created a very interesting dynamic for the years in which they coexisted in the Hill Center, soon to be built, and in the future relationships of the departments. That's why I added this quip with Ken telling Saul, see the nice office I've chosen for you, and Saul saying, I'm sure it'll be fine until I get a larger one. Saul started big with his request to the federal government, NIH, for a grant for $2.25 million, which was an incredible amount of money in 1970. The research plan included collaborations not just in medicine and biology, but it also included ecology, psychology, and a variety of other fields. It was actually a grant that we got. Research resource on computers and biomedicine from the Division of Research Resources for advanced AI methods for theory construction applied to inquiry in biomedicine, psychology, ecology, and applications in healthcare. However, we had a slight disappointment. We didn't get 2.25 million, we got a little bit under 600,000. However, it was a good thing to get started. And Saul was nothing if not persistent. He was one of the best lobbyists there have been for Rutgers, and he kept increasing the funding for the resource and from other sources throughout the years. And within the university, he moved us all into the Hill Center, which was dedicated on November 16, 1971. And through his insistence in demanding more space for our growing faculty and students, we became fondly known as the cancer of the Hill Center by mathematics and the other groups that were in it. We were joined there, I mentioned, with us today is Marv Paul, who had come with Saul from RCA. He was a professor with us until his retirement just a few years ago, working on computer architecture, parallel systems, programming languages. He wrote a book on algorithm design and went jointly with Barbara Ryder on co-work on elimination algorithms for data flow analysis. In 1971, the year after Saul established the program at the graduate level, we were joined by Bob Wisniewski, who is also here today up front, and Anya Suhara, who sadly passed away a few years ago. Bob joined the research resource, leading the group on computational modeling for ecology, as well as basic methods in numerical analysis and mathematical modeling, and he developed graduate and undergraduate modeling and simulation courses and took over the numerical methods courses after Fred Fender retired. Bob came to us from Belgium, where he got both a doctorate in mathematics and a PhD in mechanical electrical engineering at Brussels Free University. He'd been in Princeton in EAI and one of the leaders in designing analog computers. And he was an international leader in computational modeling and simulation as president of IMAX, the Society for Mathematics and Computers and Simulation, which is a successor for the Society for Analog Computation. He was also a president of FIAC, which is the five international association working with the UN and UNESCO for developing countries and computing. This is a nice picture of Bob with a look on his face, which many of you who have taken courses with him may recognize, though this one is taken at some conference, and the look on his face says, does this guy know what the heck he's talking about? Something like that. And he looked at many graduate students and undergrads in the same way. And quite a few faculty. The other person who joined us, as I said, was Anya Suhara. She came to us in 1972, though she started negotiation in 71, until 2010, when she retired. From a very accomplished family, with her mother being a sculptor, her father a professor of French. She herself studied cooking and fashion and design in Paris and in Swarthmore, until she went to the Queen of the Sciences and got all her degrees in mathematics in Illinois. She joined us in 71, having just published Recursive Function Theory and Logic. She was graduate director for many years and an outstanding teacher and mentor. A number of people, including Elaine Wayuka, who is very well known for her contributions to computer science, and many others. And she developed many computer theory courses and logic courses, as well as a Computers in Society seminar. And one of our graduates, Ileana Strenu, said, has a very good quote, "It was an exquisite topic, beautiful mathematics that Anne was conveying to generations of graduate students. In a department with only a few women on the faculty, she was a model to look up to. With grace and generosity, she touched my life and the lives of many students like me." Anne was the conscience of the department. She was a lifelong Quaker with lots of incredible social justice causes. And in departmental meetings, she made sure that in all the personal exchanges, she never hesitated to remind all of us of our ethical consequences of our actions. She encouraged students and faculty alike to live a rich, full intellectual moral life. So, borrowing shamelessly from Holt's play title, she's a woman for all seasons. Here's a picture of her later between Saul and myself when we had been chairs. And she made sure to tell us off if we didn't do things right, but it didn't mean that we listened to her. Meanwhile, in 1971 in the Research Resource, I was lucky to be able to find a graduate student, Sean Weiss, who was incredible. And Bo Vishnevetsky, these are two of the first earliest technical reports that we put out. And just a little background of how I came here to Rutgers so many years ago. I was hired in 70 before I had completed my PhD at the University of Hawaii, where I'd worked on pattern recognition for medical diagnosis with an excellent thyroidologist. And I'd gone to Hawaii because Satoshi Watanabe, who'd been at Yale, he'd been at IBM and teaching at Yale, was a theoretical physicist, student of De Broglie and Heisenberg, and who'd worked on the Japanese atomic bomb project in the war and then brought by Naval Intelligence to the United States to teach in Monterey. He knew Tom Mott, and he happened to introduce me as a person to IRL so that I could possibly come to Rutgers when I completed my PhD. But I've been working on speech recognition and other pattern recognition problems with Watanabe for a long time as an undergrad at Yale. Now, interesting personal comment. In 1970, while Saul was writing the proposal, I was finishing my thesis and hadn't defended yet. Just managed to defend, 2 days after defending, I had to fly here to start the semester, or before the semester, help Saul write the medical part of the NIH proposal. And so I was writing the Princeton, at this part at the Princeton Yankee Doodle Inn, just as my poor wife was delivering our son in Honolulu. What happened was, her mother flew from Newark to Hawaii while I was flying from Hawaii, and we crossed so that she'd have someone to take care of her. I don't think my wife has ever forgiven me for putting work before family. Anyway, however, having done that and having been successful led to a long string of good collaborations in medicine and biology, a whole bunch of places. So this is an example of good luck of being in the right place with the right people at the right time with the right experience and ideas. And then I lucked out once we all started working, as I said, with Sean Weiss, with whom I'm still collaborating 45 years later. He had brilliant insights in how theoretical AI and statistics interact and how one can abstract ideas of people developing what could be considered one of the early practical semantic web models, the causal model for glaucoma that we worked together on with Dr. Aaron Sapphire of Mount Sinai, who himself was a brilliant inventor, one of the earliest machines for doing automatic refraction of the eye, which was patented with Bausch & Lomb, where I did the statistical analysis of his results, as you can see in New York City with minority populations, which was turned out to be very practical. So Emeril, Sholom Weiss and I co-authored a paper in the AI Journal on Sholom's thesis work on Kasia. Sholom and I worked for many years, published a couple of books together, one on our expert systems work and one on machine learning work, where we popularized notions of cross-validation. And we're still working together. This paper just came out last year in Applied Intelligence on managing healthcare costs by peer group modeling, which is a whole new approach for outlier detection that works, hopefully, to reduce costs for the federal government. Meanwhile, back to 1972, Saul asked me to pose together with Bill Fabens for a photo for up somewhere. And so this is a total fake with me sitting in front of a terminal that is not doing anything other than pretending that I'm typing into it while Bill pretends he's listening to Saul, when in fact he wasn't. This was probably the first photo that was taken inside the new Hill Center where we had just come in, and to which we were able to attract national and international people like Ed Feigenbaum from Stanford, and Jaime Carbonell from Milgram and Newman, the father of Jaime Carbonell from CMU, many of you know. Our work in medicine led to a collaboration with Stanford and their network, SummXAIM, and we set up a network of ophthalmologists. Since Sapphire was an ophthalmologist, we called it ONET. But the key to the success of Rutgers computer science, in some ways, can be said to come from the friendship between Saul, Emeril, and Ed Feigenbaum. Together, they convinced Dilrao, who was the director of NIH's Division of Research Resources, to shift the emphasis from purely statistical to AI methods of inference for biomedical discovery, and later to diagnostic and therapeutic problem solving. This, in turn, led to a shift in AI from the 1960s paradigm of state-based search to the 1970s knowledge-based inference systems. It had been started by Feigenbaum with Nobel Prize-winning laureate Lenneberg and Bruce Buchanan with the Dendral system. And we followed it up with the CasNet system that I mentioned, and people at Tufts and MIT with the Present Illness Program, and the Popel, Harry Popel, with abductive reasoning program that turned into internist at Pittsburgh. And these in turn led to generalizations like Meissen and Metadendral. And then with us here at Rutgers, expert CKI room. And we lucked out again. One of the medical collaborators listed on this slide, Don Lindberg, he started working in the late 70s, was tapped to become director of the National Library of Medicine. Became this major supporter of AI work in medicine from then until his retirement last year. Here are some of my early PhDs, wonderful guys that worked with me on a variety of biomedical projects, and I apologize to the other 19 because otherwise I'd have to go on and on about it. But the point of all of this is the work in medicine had global impact, such as the program, one of the first ones for treating infectious eye diseases in Egypt and the Sahel, with Shamil Dawson of UCSF and WHO. And this made a big impact. So, Saul Emeril had a lot of reason to celebrate. The research resource was a big success, with our first secretary of the department, Elsie Jackson, without whom the department would not have functioned. And celebrating again with Priscilla Rasmussen, who was the administrator, and Saul Levy, and one of our secretaries, who unfortunately her name I've forgotten. During the 70s, the money coming in from the NIH resource and the evidence of success helped with a very rapid expansion of the faculty. Ken Kaplan joined us, Michael Realis in optimization, Bill Steiger, statistics, geometry, and theory. A whole group of people, Sridharan, Mitchell, Steinberg in AI, and Alex, who is, I see in the room here, came to us from Toronto. Naftali Minsky, who was here earlier, came to us from Technion. Jerry Richter, I don't know if he's shown up, came from Harvard. Thorne McCarthy joined us from Rutgers Law. Bob Page from NYU. So let's emphasize a few people. Jerry Richter came to us from Harvard, as I said. He taught numerical methods, had lots of interdisciplinary collaborations. In some sense, I call Jerry the Rock of Gibraltar of computer science for many years. Jerry would do and help people openly without any stinting, any hesitation. I can say the same for Alex, who's back there. Well, both of them. As you can see, Jerry got lots of awards. Then there's Bill Steiger, who joined us, as I mentioned, developed all kinds of courses. He also was director of a graduate program like Anne for many years, various books. Sriran was an extremely talented AI researcher who tragically died of malaria, which was undiagnosed about a decade ago. He started working with Chuck Schmidt in psychology, and this collaboration could be considered the beginnings of the work in computer science with cognitive science, which is developed at Rutgers with the Cognitive Science Center since. Lou Steinberg joined also from Illinois, working on AI with Saul Amaril and Tom Mitchell, and has since that time, I don't know if he's here today, developed all kinds of courses on AI and intro to computers and programming languages. And then Tom Mitchell came and joined us. He came from Stanford, where he'd done his work under Bruce Buchanan and developed an incredible advance over the dendral system, namely metadendral, where the idea of version spaces allowed to do learning from examples, generalization, specialization of the interpretation of mass spectra that was done in the original dendral. He came to Rutgers in 78. This is a picture of Tom today. These are slides that he sent me saying how Saul was his mentor, how happy he was to meet with a lot of you here, and how he got his first ideas of how to do management by being appointed acting director of LCSR by Saul, and then first director of the Center for Artificial Intelligence and Product. No, he got it wrong, I'm sorry. It was the Center for Industrial Aids to Industrial Productivity, which is what Kate stood for. He had many students here, many have gone on to distinguished careers. I don't know if any made it today, probably not. Alex Borghia, who is here, okay. Alex sent me these slides. He confesses that he really threw away his thesis from Toronto, came to Rutgers and really did a second thesis on exceptions in databases. And having been invited by Sridharan, enjoyed the AI powerhouse that we had at that point. Comment about Naftali, who was the only real systems person there, who liked subclass hierarchies and similar, even back then, and had to learn how to drive, I take it, right? Because you can't get food in New Jersey unless you can do that. We have a lot of people at Bell Labs, and he had again many students, including one who is sitting next to him right now, William Cohen, who we'll hear more about later. And Debbie McGinnis, who I knew well too, is another very distinguished person currently at RPI. And this is a wonderful photo that he provided. Thorne McCarthy, Alex himself, Jack Mostow, a guy whose name I've forgotten. Okay. And there is William Cohen, much darker hair, but an equally long beard. And next to him, guess who's there? Chaim Hirsch, who many of you know, with a beard. A very young Chaim Hirsch. Okay, guys. But to switch to the story again, Amaril's great accomplishment was for developing computer infrastructure at Rutgers by creating a laboratory for computer science research. He convinced the provost and the vice president to give us a separate unit under the provost that allows us to bring in time-sharing, large computers, the DEC 10 and DEC 20. And most importantly, Chuck Hedrick, who is sitting there, was a student at Herb Simon at CMU, our only AI Nobel Prize winner, even though he won the Nobel for Economics. Chuck learned a lot from him. And he's, we're happy to say, back with us with LCSR now. Sol Amro was the first director of LCSR, followed by Tom Mitchell, and then myself. This is a picture of Chuck in earlier days. He's in yellow today, he's in red there, together with Roy Marantz, and with a quote, "Wiretap boards are the wave of the future," back in the 1980s. Okay, two people supported Chuck and all the people at LCSR, and among the faculty, Sol Levy and Don Smith were the two strongest supporters. Sol was a liaison, and Don Smith was instrumental in migrating from, guess what, punch cards to workstations and interactive work. He was also an early adoption of Java, taught it in a data structure course, and an early adoption of the voice over IP. This is Don Smith. Picture of him, he did his PhD here at Rutgers on the focus of system for language acquisition, working with Bob Smith, who I didn't mention before. Rose to director of LCSR, and then to his long life pleasure and shame, he became director and vice president of the Rutgers OIT, which involved him in much less interesting technical work and too much politics. So that's the shame part, right? But he survived. He retired in one piece, and he's sitting up here next to Barbara Ryder. So, and he still looks youthful in this picture. If you look at him, he's, someone else, Mark Reinhold, with old tapes from the old Ec-10 shown there. People like Lenny Strunger and Vince Scrow, who were part of the group that pioneered web applications. Marge Thompson, who was a longtime staff secretary of LCSR. And how could we survive without Hans Matmore, who I believe is here. He held the hands of students and faculty alike since 1988, where he looks like a baby in that first photo, with his picture today, was showing the other picture, okay? And we couldn't have survived without Charles McGrew, who's been coming up here and connecting us and standing there. Charles should have been a professor. He has the heart of a professor, and I keep telling him he should get a PhD, even now. He has a master's from us. We couldn't survive without a whole bunch of other great people in LCSR, Dr. Watrous, Dr. Motto, Jesse, who's over there. Nor, critically, without Rick Crispin and Rob Tuff, who are sitting back there, and who are making sure that everything hangs together. And that faculty, who are totally incapable of dealing with this, don't have to deal with it. Right? None of us has to step into a machine room and deal with those fallen down wires that are lying on the ground there if we don't have to. We moved into the core building, and that's where we got enough space for them to muck around and connect things and try to untangle the wires. At the other end of the spectrum, LCSR benefited from the incredible support of Gene Young, who was Vice President for Computers and Information at Rutgers for many years. Without him, things would not have happened the way they did. He was a very modest man, but again, he deserves more recognition than anyone to provide university support for what went on at Rutgers for us. What I've been talking about can be summarized by Sol in an AI history up to the 80s, and if any of you is interested, take a look at it in these AI research reports. I'll finish my section before passing on to Eric Allender to talk about the change in the 1980s that happened with the hiring of a lot of people in computer theory, where the picture is iconic of Sol Amro back in the early period. Many of you have seen this in lots of publications showing him hiding or peeking through wires. He knew how to go into a machine room and wire things. We didn't.
This will not be long. So Kaz asked me to put a few thoughts together, and I promise it's only That's not the way it looks here. Okay, okay.
There's magic over there.
No, no, we don't touch anything. Everything is okay. So, yes, I've been here a frightfully long time. It's amazing to think that it's more than half the lifespan or the time the department's been in existence. I didn't know what to do, so I thought I would just mention the very first time I ever heard about Rutgers computer science. Back in 1980, I'm a grad student at Georgia Tech, and I'm struggling with computability theory. And Jim Alton, my office mate, and I are tearing our hair out. And part of the problem is that the text for the book has managed to take the joy and the intuition and the beauty of this field and squeeze it all out and leave some dry husks, and that's what we're reading through. And one day Jim comes into the office with his eyes all alight, and there's this great book he's found by Anja Zahara. And that is my first experience with computer science at Rutgers. And then, lo and behold, I got a job here. And when I came here, there were a few good people, but it was just a few. Bill Steiger and Zahara, Bachman Alantari, who was here earlier, probably might still be here. And Mike Grigoriadis, for whom I could find no picture, but his name is there. So then, you know, I was happy to be here, but I didn't know what I had gotten myself into, because the very next year, the earth shook because Andre Zamoretti was coming to Rutgers. Now, I don't know if all of you appreciate just what a momentous event this was. I mean, Andre was already an icon in the world of mathematics, and then for the last few years, he'd been moving to computer science and had revolutionized the field of you know, there's sorting networks. He proved that non-deterministic and deterministic linear time were separate. He had revolutionized the way that combinatorial methods were being applied to problems in computer science. And, you know, let's not forget that same year, Diane Suvain came, who's gone on to have a wonderful career. She's now on the National Science Board. Next year, from MIT, Ravi Bopanna shows up, and among other things, introduces me to squash. A couple years later, Vasek Vatel. All of this is happening. Actually, I don't even know how it all managed to happen, but Kaz was chair.
I'll tell you.
You know, it's incredible that this collection of talent arrived here. And so I had come to a place that, you know, had a few theoreticians, and all at once, you know, this was like the center of the universe. And it became even more the center with DIMAX in 1989. And this is an event, again, whose significance cannot be overestimated. Everything that has happened in theoretical computer science since then has, in some sense, passed through or been touched by DIMAX. A lot of the key developments happened there, and it really helped cement Rutgers' reputation in the world of theoretical computer science, if it weren't already like that. And it didn't stop. Leo Kachian came in 1990, and Mike Fredman the following year, and I could go on cataloging this, but you know, 1991 is when I got tenure, and then, you know, we moved out of the classic age, and it's become modern, and we don't have time to study all the modern history, except to say that more great people have come, and we still have a vibrant, strong group, which I am thrilled to be a part of. Kaz wouldn't let me, you know, he critiqued my first version of the slides. He said I needed to say something about my time as chair, and so I struggled to come up with some funny stories. And instead, what I probably have to talk about is tragedy. I mean, how did this come to pass? I had agreed to, you know, I'd been graduate program director before, and the graduate program director this time was
having to go on leave, and so I said, yeah, okay, I will serve again as for one semester as graduate program director. Chaim Hirsch hears the call of NSF and scuttles off to Washington, and there was no other candidate. You know, I was elected, yes, not unanimously, even though there was no other candidate, but there I was. You know, I was the chair, and remind you, I was also graduate program director. You know, this is may not sound like a good idea. It wasn't, okay? Never agreed to take on two huge administrative chores. But what else was happening that semester? Oh yeah, an external review. An external review, of course, requires a huge amount of preparation, which I was not ready for. I'm glad that Matthew Stone stepped in to help prepare the self-study that was part of that. What else needs to be said about my time as chair? You know, you always look back and reflect upon the fantastic hires, in particular the ones who are still here, like Rebecca and Vinod, whose names somehow did not get put on here, Vinod Ganapathy and Rebecca Wright. Rebecca, of course, is head of DIMAX. And I should also mention that nobody should take on the role of chair without having people they can turn to for advice. Marianne Holtzclaw, of course, runs the department, despite the fact that there is a chair. But nobody can be pretending to be chair without relying on the advice of somebody like Marianne, who is invaluable. But also, I could always count on Don Smith, until Don left. So that was a bit of a blow, but you know, Don was certainly essential to getting me through that initial period. I wanted to close. I'm not going to talk much about myself, even though I'm happy I've had some great students, but when I was looking back at the early days, I reflected on the fact that one thing that I remember from my first classes was that they had some great students who were coming from applied areas. I mean, Fritz Henglein, who's gone on to do good stuff in Copenhagen, Tony Bonner, University of Toronto, Ron Vandermaiden, University of New South Wales. None of them worked with me, although they learned enough from complexity theory that it actually played a part in their theses, and I served on their committees. So, you know, the fact that the really top applied students were also taking and benefiting from the complexity theory courses is something that, you know, we've become a little bit more more separated over the years. And except that, of course, there is still a lot of great theoretical work that's being applied to systems. And I've mentioned Martin Ferrich Colton and Rebecca Wright and Mutu, all of whom are doing great things here, and I probably should be mentioning other people too, but time is short, we are behind schedule, and I wanted to thank you and wish everyone a happy 50th.
So Eric left you in suspense. Why did we grow incredibly in theory in the 80s? Well, it wasn't only theory that we grew in. We grew in a whole variety of areas. Theory happened to be the most dramatic. I've just been told that I have to put 200 slides in 4 minutes. Okay, Mission Impossible. Let's see how this works. From the 1980s to now, Charles gets me the connection. A lot of things have happened. I won't talk about very recent stuff, because obviously, okay, no, not yet. What happened in the early 80s that meant that we grew in theory? There we go. No. I have it, but you don't. We went from being a department that was heavily concentrated in AI to a department that was much more distributed. And the reason we were doing, and it happened, was that on the one hand, Saul Emmerill started shifting his research from the biomedical to more abstract AI and got funding from DARPA. I was working a lot on the medical side. I took over the AI medicine resource. Saul decided he thought it might not be a bad idea if computer science moved to the School of Engineering. The majority of the faculty in computer science was unhappy with that idea. And there was an election in which I got elected as chair. And we did not go into the School of Engineering. We joined or stayed in the arts and sciences. Emmerill at that point took a leave and went to DARPA. And something else happened. The New Jersey Governor's Commission on Industrial Productivity had set up this CAPE Center where Emmerill, myself, and Mitchell had participated. Mitchell was the first director. CAPE, however, was chosen by the university to go primarily to engineering with Herb Freeman, and that led to an interesting decade of friction between them and us. But on the positive side, the 80s were fantastic for Rutgers and led to the growth in theory and in all kinds of fields because Governor Kaine supported a New Jersey bond for higher education. And basically, I made an alliance with Dan Gornstein, the chair of math, and mathematics and computer science joined together in order to create DIMAX and try to build strength in computer theory, bridging computer science and math. At the same time, this coincided with a skyrocketing of enrollment during the Reagan recovery years. Ken Kaplan was indispensable to me as vice chair, and he supported Barbara Ryder, who introduced the first non-major course on the introduction of computer science to non-major students. The mid-80s then saw expansion not only in theory but in math, but at the same time a problem politically between us and CAPE. Computer science, as Eric suggested, rose dramatically in its rankings once we grew strong. I took a second term as chair. I was elected to the Institute of Medicine of the National Academy, continued hiring. Then Emmerill came back from DARPA as a touring endowed professor and proposed a $14 million grant, the largest that Rutgers had ever had, on hypercomputing and design. And we built a new building, the core building that you all know, where competition for space was fierce. That's what it looked like while building, that's what it looks like now. The 80s, besides theory, we had programming languages and systems. Barbara Ryder is with us today from the first. She came to us from Bell Labs, from previously Stanford. Apostolos Georgoulis, who is here, Bachman Kalantari, who we've heard referred to, Tomasz Jemielinski, who's sitting next to her. And Badrinath, who may be in this room too. Barbara came to us from distinguished places, Brown and Stanford, being at Bell Labs. She finished her PhD here. She's a great mentor for people, incredible leader at the ACM level, all kinds of great activities in developing computer literacy at Rutgers, research on programming languages and groups that became national in scope, and as well as she moved to Virginia Tech, where she has become chair of the department. There's some very nice pictures of her in her Rutgers robes. Barbara had an incredible effect on the people in programming languages and systems. And Apostolos Georgoulis, who came to us from Greece originally and then SUNY, did incredible work in shifting from numerical methods to search problems, started TEOMA, which ended up with ASK. And as you may know, some of you, the inside story, that itself had an effect on all sorts of things, including Google itself. Bachman Kalantari came to us from Minnesota and has done a lot of work in numerical methods, but developed something unique, polynomiography, which is a method of graphically describing things. And you can buy his calendar from Amazon if you want to. He has lots of students. There's a picture of us in front of his one of his posters. coming, and Tomasz Jedelinski is here before our poor chairman tries to cut me off because we're running out of time, because our poor dean is waiting unhappily there in the back for me to shut up and be able to speak. This is a good picture of Tomasz when he had hair. Stand up, Tomasz, and show how you look today. And so, wondering where the tasty food was. He did the Dataman project, which is a great success, tons of money from DARPA, together with Badrinath, great thing. You'll see this all online. I'm sorry, my apologies to everyone. Ken Kaplan kept us going through the 90s. Tomasz, yes, four old chairs, right, all together. At that period, Saul Amirel was elected fellow, received the Alan Newell Award. He celebrated his 70th jubilee or birthday with a raft of great people in AI from around the country. The faculty was added to Martin Farish-Colton, Chaim Hirsch, Kramer, Iftode, Stone, Ben Gopal, Elgamal. There's stuff, I got slides from all of them. I'm sorry, I apologize. I'm flashing through them and you will see all of this given to the lateness of the hour. Look at this on the website. Summaries of the great work that people at Rutgers have done over the last years. Matthew Stone, who's over there, okay. Face-to-face conversation from Matthew. Great students, too, is over there. Currently serving and keeping the department together. There's some of the people that we know, including right in the middle, Craig Neville Manning, who just gave the talk before lunch. Sesh joined us as a student, done wonderful stuff at the Industrial Advisory Board. Ahmed Elgamal, this is something, he's here. He's done incredible work first here and then in Maryland. Lots of his students, including one, Babak Saleh, who is here. His research recently has gone in an incredible direction. Art and AI, advancing AI in the digital humanities. How can you make a machine see lots of things that you look at? At art, in other words, how can you figure out aesthetics? What's the pattern recognition and insight into aesthetics? Michael Littman came to us, he was at Rutgers before going to Brown, was chair for a while. Sean sent me a bunch of slides about his great work that he's done, how to analyze big data without storing all of it, and what are the dynamics of pricing on the internet, a kind of important thing. Very sad, in 2002, Saul died of a heart attack after suffering from cancer. We were going to celebrate his retirement. Instead of that, it became a celebration of his life. After that, in 2005, Bob Wyszomierski stepped down as the president of IMAX, and I was lucky to be with him in Paris when celebrating that. Eric, who you just heard from, was chair for a period. Michael Littman was chair. Dimitri, these are wonderful pictures of you looking younger before you have a dean advancing on you to seize the podium. Yes, and this is our convocation in 2013. And this is my end. What about the history? Is there such a thing of historical informatics that AI can do? Can we link language, metaphor, and vision in a new paradigm of AI combining human and machine learning? And theory formation, which is what Amirel did, that will be different than the routine machine learning we do today. That I pose as a challenge to us, to all of us, and is something that I invite you all to join in extending this history that I put here in the future. Anyone who's participated and contributed to computer science, kindly send me material. We'll have not just the 50th, but the 51st, 52nd, and so on, history of AI for all the new people who've joined us. And now, Dimitri, Peter March, my apologies for dragging on, but I figured we'd better get us to the present and how you two guys can work together to make us even bigger.